My name is Ross Conroy. Last week, I received an inexpensive postcard in the mail. On the front, it had a tacky picture of a cute puppy emerging from a checker-clothed basket. On the back, it had my address and a simple message in green ballpoint pen. Your move. Standing at my mailbox, I crumpled the postcard into my pocket and checked my watch. If I started driving right then, I could beat the late afternoon rush hour leaving the city. So that is what I did. I took 202 East out of Phoenix, then continued on Route 60, past Gold Canton and Superior, eventually turning onto 70 South. It got dark as I drove. The landscape became completely monotonous before my headlights. I listened to no music, didn't turn on sports talk radio. I kept my mind completely clear. I made one stop to stretch my legs and get coffee at a 7-Eleven. In the town of Safford, Arizona, near the corner of South 8th Avenue and Relations Street, there's a three-story office building whose tenants all vacated by around 2017. Four lease signs now hung in the east and south windows, but the sun had bleached them so badly it was difficult to even read the phone number on them. At just past 7 p.m., I opened the smudged glass entrance door with the slightly bent key that had been scotch-taped to the postcard. No lights were on inside the building, as usual. It smelled a little moldy. I'd never trusted the elevator to work, so I took the stairs to the third floor. The offices of Spotswood Adhesives, defunct since 2015, were utterly empty and dark. Halfway down a long corridor of closed doors, one bearing some profane purple graffiti, was a conference room that could have easily fit 50 people. I switched on the jittery overhead fluorescents. 16 long tables filled the entire room in four even rows, marching from one wall to another. There was just enough room between each row for a normal-sized person to walk with some care. Covering each table's full length and width were large connected segments of chipboard, about a dozen on each table. The glossy white surface of each segment displayed a grid pattern of one-inch squares. Each square was inked in a different color: red, blue, green, yellow, orange, black, pink, gray. I took a sip of my now lukewarm coffee, drew in a deep breath, and stood with my back against the near wall. Resting upon about a quarter of the thousands upon thousands of inch-wide squares before me were small, carefully fabricated pieces of either wood or glass. Some pieces were round, others square or triangular. Some were more flat than others, and a few were almost 2 inches high. Again, there was a profusion of colors among them. A few hundred had been delicately nicked with white paint to depict a small cross shape, crescent, or star symbol, numbers from 1 to 13, or letters from A to M. A total of 20, just 20, round glass pieces were completely translucent and noticeably larger than anything else on the tables, straining to be contained within the borders of their squares. By about 10:15, I felt ready to truly survey the situation, and I walked among the rows silently, with not even the sound of air conditioning for company, for the building had not been air-conditioned for some time. The slowly dying atmosphere within it had made some of the chipboard mats warp a little around the edges, but the material was still sturdy enough. It took an hour to isolate all my opponent's most recent moves among the polychromatic chaos. A green starn had been slid down column 44 west a total of 9 decagrids, causing a butterfly effect in which both the red crux holding my center territory and the protective ring I'd set up around square 1160 were all but decimated. That was fine. I'd expected that. It hadn't been much of a trap I'd laid, but my opponent had at least played into its initial setup. The moves on table four were far more concerning. I'd left a break in a line of black starns which totally exposed them to a new maraud, and this oversight had quickly been taken advantage of. If I didn't address that situation, I might be tied down in that corner for months before being able to shift my attentions permanently elsewhere. I eventually sat down on the floor in the corner of the room, my back against the far wall, and drank the last of my coffee, averting my eyes from the boards as much as possible so my thought processes wouldn't become corrupted. Sometimes it helped to turn the lights off entirely, but that tended to make me hyper-aware of the very occasional sound of a car passing by on the street below. At about midnight, I stood up again and resumed my patrol of the tables. Back and forth I walked, three more times, pausing extensively here and there, leaning close to individual arrangements and emerging situations. Honor bound me from retaining the imagery using anything but my mind, no transcriptions, notes, or photographs permitted. Both I and my opponent respected the rules completely. I touched many of my pieces that night, even lifted a few to reposition them, but for a long time committed to no permanent moves. I mentally played out a possible sequence on table 9 in which I simply rushed my opponent's well-protected lantern from three sides, but I didn't want to spend the winter retreating if it didn't work. Columns 17 West and 808 North were almost shockingly wide open for long relay slides, which could almost have connected in the center of the room, pivoted, and connected enough odd-numbered starns to form an impenetrable wall around my translucent crux. I'd worked myself into a lather of anticipation when I realized to my horror that because I was simply standing too far away during my first analysis and I was perhaps getting tired, I'd overlooked a crescent symbol where I thought there had been none, and my strategy became a pipe dream. I napped for 20 minutes or so as a mental reset and then got up again. I wanted to splash water on my face, but there was no running water in the bathrooms anymore. By 2 in the morning, I had settled on a course of action. It wasn't much, but it was a solid defensive maneuver that would, I thought, get my opponent distracted and thinking I had designs on breaking things up on tables 12, 13, and 14. I slid one green starn, a mere 4 decagrids, to support a minor maraud. One piece moved, and no more. I stood there, looking down at that piece, for another quarter of an hour, waiting for my thoughts to betray me. They never did. So I turned, shut off the lights, and left the room. I spent the night at a flea bag motel called the Backbeat Inn, 20 miles outside town so I wouldn't fall asleep at the wheel. I tossed and turned mostly, getting up once before dawn and burning my hand on the cheap plastic coffee maker. I tossed the awful swill it produced into the bathroom sink. There followed one good hour of sleep in which I dreamed I was petting a goat on a tropical beach, but looking toward the ashen and stormy horizon, I saw that the clear blue water was overlaid with a grid pattern that bulged and bent with each gentle wave. I woke up and left the room without showering. From the Continental Breakfast Station, I prepared a bowl of Fruit Loops in an impossibly undersized styrofoam bowl. I ate it all alone, eyes bloodshot, and got back into the car for the 3-hour drive back to Phoenix. I was 40 miles down the road when I suddenly pulled over into a Shell station next to the air pumps and rested my head on the steering wheel. It had all just come crashing in a tide of conflicting yet cohering visuals, precisely what my opponent was intending with an ever-growing X pattern of blue and white starns that seemed to be closing in on my black crux month by month. It wasn't a maraud at all, I realized. in a summer and autumn spent matching each other slide for slide on almost every table in that conference room, hundreds of pieces of wood and glass circling and encircling, sometimes 20 or 30 pieces on a single move, he'd been creating two fronts all along. Not one. Not one. That I had missed this the night before shook my confidence to its core. I pulled back onto the highway, going in the other direction, back towards Safford. I arrived an hour later. Harsh sunlight tried to follow me into the cool shadows of the building on Relation Street. I took the stairs up two at a time, my fatigue now overwhelmed by something like panic, tinged with the exhilaration of pulling oneself back from a terrifying precipice. I strode back down the long, dark corridor, flicked the lights on again in the conference room, and walked over to the green starn I'd moved hours before. I put it back into its original position, turned around, stepped a few feet to my left, and bent over a different table entirely. I pushed a black starn four spaces to the south, so it landed firmly in the center of the spreading, toxic X pattern that might have destroyed me as early as the following spring. Then I left the building again, remembering that the truck stop outside Fort Thomas sold, among its air fresheners and work gloves and novelty key rings, inexpensive postcards that could be dropped in a mailbox just outside. Postcards showing covered bridges, gliding sailboats, and cute puppies toying with balloons.
Hey kids, your summer vacation just got a whole lot wackier with Zany Zonkers, the board game with a zillion colors. Hope Mom and Dad have a big basement, because with the Zany Zonkers, all the pieces and boards we've packed inside a box as big as a baboon need lots of room to spread out. Come on and have some zippy, zesty fun with your brother or sister or any kid in the neighborhood with Zany Zonkers. Available at a toy or department store near you.